Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/watsonassistant.
Whoop, whoop. Happy draft day, fellas. 8 hours. The countdown continues. 8 hours until the 2020 draft right here on ESPN. Cannot wait. I cannot wait to see who gets picked, and I cannot wait to see how this thing goes down because it's a totally unique experience.
It is, and I can't wait either. I'm going to be chicken winged. Extra crispy.
I want four chicken wings fried hard.
I'm super stoked because I know Sean McVay maybe not answer my question directly, but I still believe that this is an exciting opportunity for him to really put his personality and his thumbprint on this franchise and his organization. When he first got there, he was young. It was his first experience. Perhaps he relied heavily on the opinions of others and the experience of others. Now he's been in the league for a little bit, and starting with the draft, you begin to see what exactly a Sean McVay thumbprint is going to look like, and I'm excited for him and the Rams in this opportunity.
You know what? Certainly, LZ, we did a great job at drafting guys over the years, and I've had Wade Phillips here with me, and he certainly helped us along the way. But Les Snead's had plenty of drafts along the way, and we worked together collectively as a group. We've decided on certain guys that we got on our board, and we're going to eventually move forward from there. But I learned a lot from a lot of coaches over the years, whether it was in Washington, whether it was in Tampa with Gruden. Now I have the opportunity on my own to do some things here with the Rams, so we're going to certainly keep looking and knocking down all the –
That's what he's going to get you. Okay, hold on. That is Sean McVay, or is this Sean McVay who talked to us yesterday?
Yeah, I think there's some good backs in this draft. You know, number one, he played some, had some injuries for different reasons that didn't enable him to play as much as we would have liked. But Daryl Henderson's a guy that we have a lot of confidence in. You know, we moved up in the third to be able to go get him. He was a guy we identified last year as somebody we think can really be a good player for years to come. Malcolm Brown's been solid. And then this is a good draft class. We're definitely going to be looking to see if some of the players that we really value are there, when we have our picks. And if the value is right, then I think that's something that we could potentially address.
Not bad, Key. It's pretty spot on.
Well, he's going to give it all to you. He's going to give it all to you. And that's okay. And I think the Rams will do a good job, as they always have, in the draft. They've done a pretty good job. Certain rounds and certain picks will allow you to get value for what it is that you're looking for and what you've identified. If Sean McVay came over, he identified Cooper Kupp. I need an inside guy that can play the Y, the zebra position within our offense when we take the tight end off the field. He's a guy. We like him. We like everything that he gives us. Don't say anything. We'll take him. He's a third-round pick for us. Now Cooper Kupp is on to a second contract, hopefully, with the Rams soon here. So, as you start to look at what the way they draft in their certain needs, that's the way they draft for need specific. If you just go and you look, they took tight ends, Higbee, they took Everett, they needed that. They went out and took Taylor Rapp, they needed that. They took David Long at corner, they needed that. They're not just drafting guys to be drafting best player available. They draft for need.
Yeah, well, look, so the Rams have made it very clear that they're going to build this team through the later rounds in the draft. They have not picked in the first round since Jared Goff. And Jared Goff, look, they drafted him number one overall. He's their guy. He took him to a Super Bowl. He's won the division 2 of the 3 years that he's been with Sean McVay. So that one worked. We've seen them take Aaron Donald and Todd Gurley and Michael Brockers and some other guys in the first round. They've had a ton of success in the first round, but you look at what they take later in the draft. You mentioned Taylor Rapp. He's starting. John Johnson a couple years ago, starting. Tyler Higbee, starting. They've done an incredible job of finding not just guys that fill needs, Key, but guys that start on their team beyond the first round. They're as good at that as anybody else in the league.
No, that is true. So as they start to look, is there a running back? Do they feel good about Henderson? They didn't get enough look at him. They're going to have to draft a guy based on the college film that they see. That's a plug-in position. Do you draft somebody at Whitworth's spot in the second or third round that you feel has the potential to be a first-round grade, but for some reason he slipped to you, you take him, now you got that position that you need, or the right side of the offensive line? So you have to start to look at what it is that we need in the draft to move forward, because clearly, they're not a Super Bowl contending team as it sits today. They may be a borderline playoff caliber team, wild card-ish, but they're not 2 years ago Rams. So you not only use this draft for today, but you use it for tomorrow as well.
So with that in mind, can they continue to have success? And I know they missed last year. They were 9-7 and missed. They were the last team out under the new format they would have been in. Can you continue to compete at that level that you're talking about, Keith? Not just, hey, we got in and maybe we got a shot, but to be one of the teams that you know is going to be there at the end the way they were a couple of years ago if you aren't picking in the first round? Or do you have to get back into that first round?
You don't have to get back into the first round because a lot of the NFL teams are made up of later round guys. That's what the people don't seem to realize. Everybody thinks everybody's a first round pick. Think about me, guys in the first round don't make it. That's just garbage, right? And then you think about the guys in the 2, 3, 4 range that turn out to be the superstars. And this is not to bring family into it, but I am. My nephew was a second round pick.
Yeah.
All them receivers in front of him, them dudes got new homes, every last one of them, if they even in the league. And that wasn't number 4 years ago. They went all those first round receivers that went in front of him are either at new teams or out of the league.
So with that in mind, I mean, think about it, because like you just described, if I'm trading away my first round picks for guys like Jalen Ramsey, who I know is not going to be out of the league. Jalen Ramsey's the real thing, right? He's going to play that position and play it well. Why not do that and then find those other guys like you're talking about in the later rounds? Because I'm going to find good players in the later rounds. Maybe I'm not going to find some mega, mega, mega
but
stars.
Nobody but ever said
that's Jalen Ramsey.
Nobody said that the Jalen Ramsey deal was a bad deal. That right. was a good deal because there's no corner in the draft in the first round that's better than Jalen Ramsey. So I just got my first-round corner is right there. He's already on the team. He's played in the pros. Same thing with Brandon Cooks. Brandon Cooks was a good bet for the Rams in the 20s when they traded to the New England Patriots. He just got banged up and became a salary cap casualty to a degree, plus injuries. But they still got something back from him. They got some production. They got a Super Bowl appearance. And they then moved on and got a draft pick for him.
Yeah,
I am curious as to whether or not the Rams are going to still try to find a way to crowbar their way into tonight's conversation. You know, I know they've had a lot of success in the second and third and fourth rounds over the last 3 to 4 seasons.
How many picks do they have in the second round?
One.
So they don't have enough capital to get back. And it's a back end first rounder.
Yeah, I mean, I want to say it's 50. I'm looking for it right here. My computer's a little slow. I believe their first pick is the 54th pick.
Yeah, so that's hard to get back into the first round. If you told me they had 2 second-round picks in the 30 somewhere.
52, 40, Key, excuse me.
If they 52. Had a 38 and a 42, maybe they could slide back into the back half of the first round with that. But it's going to be difficult sitting at 50 to give up a second rounder, a third rounder, and a next year's future to move back into a position in the late first round to get a guy that you probably can get in the second round anyway.
Look, I love how they've done it. I mean, you'd look at it. The guys that you typically have to take in the first round are quarterbacks. They did that. They got Jared Goff. They've built their team with these later round picks and acquiring the Brandon Cooks of the world, the Jalen Ramsey of the world. And they're filling out their roster with guys like Taylor Rapp, who they're getting in the second round, who are really good NFL players. This works. They've been able to get at guys during the season, acquire proven NFL talent, whether it's a guy like Ramsey in the middle of the season, a guy like Dante Fowler in the middle of the season, and they don't have to go out and spend and hope with a first-round draft pick. Because like you've said a couple of times, Key, the 32 guys that get picked in the first round tonight, half of them will be fine, and half of them will be guys that we don't even remember their names. That's just the reality of it. So if you can eliminate that, especially at that price, at that high of part in the draft, that I don't have to do a coin flip on whether or not my guy's going to work out. There's no coin flip on Jalen Ramsey. I know exactly what it is. It makes a ton of sense to me.
It does. And we talked about this prior, like when we did the deal for Cooks, we said, okay, well, This makes all the sense in the world. No receiver in that draft, when you evaluate, was as talented as Brandon Cooks. And you say the same thing about Jalen Ramsey, or you say the same thing about some of these other guys. You look at what the Tampa Bay Buccaneers did just recently with the fourth pick giving up to the New England Patriots for Rob Gronkowski. New England got the better end of the deal. Gronk's not going to play for New England. And as far as the tight end position goes, for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, they're not going to get a tight end that's Gronkowski ability or have the ability as a Gronkowski in the fourth round. So, here, you can have that because I'm only expecting for this to work out for me for a couple years anyway. I'm not looking for this to turn into a second deal 10 years from now and all that. No, I'm not. I'm just looking for right now immediate success. And that is what the Rams did when they acquired Jalen Ramsey. They said, we can try to turn this defense around because they were sputtering along, but the secondary was god-awful. So they moved Peters. They moved Tlaib. They brought in Jalen Ramsey. They gave up a one to try to fix it. It didn't quite work out quite as well as they wanted it to, but at least they got their future corner in the draft. Because think about it, they would have been selecting a corner right now anyway with that first round pick because of what they did with Peters, and Tlaib was older. They were moving on from him. The numbers said so. The numbers said that clearly, that Peters was going to want a big deal. They didn't want to pay him. And then Tlaib was older and his number was going to be high, so they was going to cut bait as far as that goes. They were going to be stuck with a first round pick. So you might as well give it up for Jalen Ramsey because you're going to have Jalen Ramsey for another 8-plus years.
I have a crazy idea or a crazy question for you, Key. Say Tua starts to fall and you're the Rams. Do you take a chance in the second round on a backup QB like Tua just to see what that may become?
In the second round? If he falls to the second round, he'll never get to the fifth.
Because you just said you,
but he won't get. He won't get to the 50s.
And another guy, but you just said you, as well as our previous guests, both said you wouldn't touch him. So if there's a lot of teams, enough teams that say they wouldn't touch him, then could that not be a scenario that could happen?
Yeah, but you're not gonna have 32 fools. There's gonna be somebody that says, "Oh, second round pick, not a problem. I'll do it." He's not gonna get to the Rams in the second round. Not gonna happen.
The draft starts tonight. We are 7 hours and 49 minutes away from that. There are also some NFL prop bets that you can get in on. We're going to go over some of the better ones of those. That's coming up next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN. So we have an answer to one of the questions. Remember on Monday when we were talking about The Last Dance and how the level of liquid in Michael Jordan's glass kept going up and down? We know what's in the glass now. It's Michael Jordan's own tequila. He has his own tequila brand that goes for as much as $1,800 a bottle. Damn. But that's what he's drinking in the documentary is Michael Jordan tequila.
Well, I know he had his own tequila, but I just didn't put two and two together. Him and a group of individuals started a tequila brand about a year ago. And I didn't put that together, but it makes sense. I mean,
Sincoro is the name of the tequila.
Grown ass man. He can do what he want to do.
Yeah. Grown-ass billionaire man. He can do what he wants to do.
People be so funny. Everybody trying to figure out what's in his glass. What difference does it make?
Well, I'm kind of curious.
You want to know. You want to know what's his beverage of choice.
Man, well, think about it, Key. When you and I were at your club and I ordered an old-fashioned with a certain type of bourbon, you were appalled. You made me upgrade because you were horrified by my choice.
Well, you was going in the well, man. You don't have to go in the well with me.
I like Makers. What's wrong with Makers?
Going to the well. They had a whole glassy shelf with a lot of stuff that you could have got that was better than the well.
He's throwing shade at our Makers, LZ.
I didn't say anything about – I said well. I didn't say name.
No, that's what well. I ordered. And you said, no, don't do that. You got to do – and by the way, you were right. The other one is pretty damn good.
Hey, if you're going to drink, I don't want you throwing up on the carpet.
there's different kinds of drinking. There's, I'm sipping, and this is going to last me a minute, so then you go top. But if you know you're just throwing them back, you might as well go cheap because you're not caring about your health anyway at this point. You're just trying to get a good feeling.
Well, you can go top and still throw them back on top. You're just going to get there faster.
You're going to have to get some of that Sincoro. We got to get that done. It's Jordan. It's the owners of the Bucks. It's the owners of the handful of different teams have all bought into this.
NBA
the Bucks,
teams?
The Celtics. Yeah, the Bucks, the Celtics, the Lakers, they all co-own that.
That's right. Genie is involved.
Yeah, yeah. There you go. There you go.
So, all right, so they must be selling them in their stadiums.
Sure. Why not?
Arenas.
Why not? Uh-huh. The draft not only is tonight, but people are going to have action. We know how much people love to gamble, and there's nothing to gamble on. So you can expect people to go hard on the draft tonight. Raj, what are some of the prop bets on the board?
That's right, Travis. And this is going to be the most gambled upon draft ever with the money already come in and what they're anticipating. But some of the fun prop bets, you know, we love prop bets. Let's take, for instance, quarterbacks, guys. Over under 3.5 quarterbacks taken in the first round. So you think three or more. So under is three, more is over.
In the first round or the first 10?
First round.
Way over.
You think it's going to go way over. You think Love and okay. All right. LZ?
Wait, what's the question now?
Quarterbacks, how many quarterbacks will be taken in the first round? We know the three going for sure. The question mark is Love and
Hurts.
If someone's going to take a chance on Hurts, yeah. So Love, people have down maybe in the 20s. He might fall into the second round. So do you think they'll be over the big three we always talk about
over
or under?
Over the three.
Keyshawn? I'm thinking over.
All right, over the three. Okay, so let's get some more tougher ones then. Tua, over or under 3.5 in terms of the position. Is he going to go at pick 3 or is he going to go at pick, let's say, 4 or more? So you think that someone will Tua drop or will he go at about 3.5?
I think he drops, goes over.
In my opinion.
Over.
You're taking the over. He doesn't go early like that.
No.
Yeah, he doesn't go early. I'll take the over.
Okay, LZ?
I got him going to the Chargers in our mock draft. So
you got him going over. Okay. And then Herbert, of course, he's at 5.5. Do you have him going at 5 or do you have him going 6 or later, Travis?
Over. I think the Chargers have got their eyeballs on him. I think he goes over.
Okay. What about you, Keyshawn?
I think he stays at 5.
Okay. So you're taking the under on that.
Yeah, and then, I'm taking the under.
LZ, what do you think for Herbert? Over or under 5.5, his draft position?
I have him going to the Dolphins. So what is that, 5?
Oh, wow. So
Key,
under there.
Key, very quickly on Herbert. You like him, but I'm watching guys like McShay and some other guys, and they're kind of lukewarm on him. Lewis Riddick was on TV this morning saying that, no disrespect to him, but he's not into his universe. Why do some people not like Justin Herbert?
Same reason why they felt that Trev Albers was better pick for the Indianapolis Colts when he was picked. So everybody got their own flavor. You know, it's you got to remember a lot of times people get caught up in the hype of the highlight tapes and some of the reels opposed to really studying guys and really paying attention to it. You got to form your own opinions and not the opinions of everybody else that's out there. And my opinion is he's a better football prospect, in my opinion, at the quarterback spot for me in the NFL more so than Tua. Not the injuries set aside. I mean, who was Justin Herbert throwing to, man? When he threw at the Senior Bowl, he had better receivers at the Senior Bowl than he ever had in his college career at Oregon.
He's not throwing to Henry Ruggs and Jerry Jeudy, that's for sure.
When he performed at the Combine, he performed just like he performed at the Senior Bowl. So they got to take all that in consideration. And he ain't throwing to nobody up at Oregon. Stop.
All right. Well, speaking of throwing people, the juicy pick in here, Jordan Love. Now, you guys said over in terms of 3.5 quarterbacks, so you believe he'll go in the first round. Now, I found one at Caesars. They have a position for him at 19.5, over or under. And you guys know who picks that number 19?
It's Raiders.
The Raiders. So, basically, will Jordan Love get past the Raiders or not? And just to let you know, Mel Kiper's final mock draft came out. And he has Jordan Love going right there at 19 to the Raiders. So, Keyshawn, will he get past the Raiders or no, Jordan Love?
Under.
So, you mean you think someone will take him prior to the Raiders?
I think somebody will take him before the Raiders.
Oh, wow. Okay. There you go. LZ.
I got the Raiders drafting a wide receiver at that spot, so I'm going to say no.
So, he's going to go over.
He's going to go past the Raiders, yeah.
Travis, what do you think on that?
I think I'm going to go with Key on this one. I'm going to go under for the simple fact that guys always take chances on quarterbacks. They always are looking for that guy that they think. I mean, what have we heard about Jordan Love the last few days? That, he's a Patrick Mahomes type player. We saw Mahomes fall to where he went. Somebody wants to be the next smartest guy in the room and take the guy like Mahomes went with Andy Reid, I think somebody takes a flyer on him way before 19.
Okay. All right. And guys, we've been hearing this whole time. It's a wide receiver draft, right? Deepest position at the draft. You got Jerry Jeudy. You got CeeDee Lamb, Ruggs, Denzel Mims, Justin Jefferson, Chase Claypool, T. Higgins. We heard them all in Key's mock drafts up and down. Over under 5.5 receivers taken in the first round, Keyshawn. Will there be 6 receivers taken or will there be 5?
Under.
Under. So you think some one of those receivers or a couple of those receivers are going to drop? All right.
Yeah, I think I think in all honesty, I think it's going to be about 4 receivers that get taken in the first round.
Oh, wow. Only 4. Okay. Yeah. LZ, where are you going?
I'm going over.
Okay.
I got 4 going in the first 20. So I can assume that one more is going to sneak in there.
Right. Okay. All right. And Travis, what do you got?
I'll go under for the simple fact that there's so many of them. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
I think that the abundance of these guys means that I can wait and get one later. I can move down and get a very good player later in. So they're going to pick those guys in the second round and beyond. So I'll go under.
And it's not for – and the thing is, it's not for Julio Joneses. See, that's right, the difference. Right. These guys are all the same.
That's right. Okay, final questions, yes or no, real quick, and then we break. Will there be a running back taken in the first round? Keyshawn?
Yes.
LZ?
No.
Oh, Travis?
I'll go no, too, for the reason I don't think there's a guy that just pops out at you. There's no Gurley. There's no Saquon. There's no guy like that. I think we'll see him go in the second round and beyond.
The fact that the Raiders had success with Jacobs last year, this is a copycat league. DeAndre Swift goes in the first round from the University of Georgia.
Ooh, there you go. Right. There you go.
There you go. DeAndre Swift is the number to look at.
Steve Kerr, go. Here we go. Next up. Coming up, everyone, right this way.
Steve Kerr is coming up next. He still won the last dance. Head coach of the Warriors next on the Morning Show at 710 ESPN.
It's your home speaking, and I need you to do me a couple of favors. First, could you get that blueberry that rolled under the fridge last week? It's throwing my feng shui off. Second thing, bundle your home and car insurance with Geico. It's easy, and we could save money. Lastly, I know you were thinking of painting the nursery back to off-white, but I'm actually feeling this baby blue. Didn't think it was my color, but I am pulling it off.
Geico. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
All right, so a man who was right in the middle of the last dance, that last Bulls championship in 97-98, of course, the head coach of the Golden State Warriors as well, Steve Kerr, joining us on the Sprint People's Hotline. Steve, good morning. How are you?
I'm good. Morning, guys. How are you?
Morning, Coach. Morning. You're a very popular guy right now for a variety of reasons. Give us your assessment of the first 2 episodes of the last dance, and what are you anticipating going forward this upcoming weekend?
Well, for me, it's like watching a home movie that I pulled out of the attic, you know, that I haven't watched in forever. It's just crazy to see, you know, my own life 22 years later, and my kids are loving the footage, and a lot of the stuff I've sort of forgotten about. So it's really fun to be reminded of the whole era. And it's amazing to just be able to relive it on screen. And so I'm just, more than anything, I'm enjoying it. I'm looking forward to the next one Sunday.
Steve, does it feel to you, I mean, you were right in the middle of it. You lived it. We're all watching it from a distance. When you watch The Last Dance, does it capture the magnitude of what it was like to be a member of that team back in the late 90s?
Yeah, I think it really does. You know, I thought the footage from Paris was great because it really captured the feel of the media back then. It was really, you know, when you hear the phrase the throng of media, that's what it was back then. It was just a throng. And, you know, there were just cameras everywhere, and there was no social media. So it was really just. You know, periodically at key spots during the day, whether it was practice or right before the game or after the game, you just have these huge hordes of media, but then you'd have peace and quiet. And I think that's the biggest difference between back then and now. You know, now it just seems to continue on because we all have access, you know, to everything on our phones. And so the modern player can't really escape it. And I felt like back then it was almost more mystical. You know, the fame was different. You know, you could escape it. Michael used to escape it just by going to his suite and playing cards almost every night with his security guys, and that was his time to get away. And you know, now these days, I don't know that our guys are able to get away as much as it was possible to do, you know, 25 years ago.
But Coach, I saw a story along those lines we've been talking about in which you believe that Michael left the game for baseball because he just needed the break. Is that true?
I think so. You know, I wasn't there for the first three championships. When I arrived in Chicago, it was the first year that he had left in 93, 94. And that's what the guys who had played with him, B.J. Armstrong, John Paxson, Bill Cartwright, you know, Horace Grant, all those guys who had been part of those teams, they just felt like he was fried, that Michael was just fried. And that's why he stepped away. And I think that made perfect sense because, you know, he was going through so much, not only with his own crazy life, but losing his father at the time. And I think he had just sort of had enough and decided to go play baseball. And when he came back a couple of years later, he was so motivated. And it was just an incredible sight to see him practice every day. And so I think he needed the break. And when he came back, he was just on fire and ready to roll again.
Steve Kerr, the head coach of the Warriors, joining us here on the Sprint People's Hotline. And, you know, we saw some of the footage in the first couple of episodes of Jordan being tough on his teammates at practice. And you've had great players that you've played with and coached with, obviously KD and Steph and Clay and guys like that. Have you ever had been around anybody as a player or coach that had Michael's intensity, not in the games, but in everything that wasn't the games?
Not to that level, you know. And what's different is these days we don't really scrimmage anymore. You know, back then you scrimmaged all the time, and so there was more chance for competition in practice. You know, we've learned a lot more, and we try to do a better job of preserving our players' bodies now. And the NBA has sort of created a schedule where it's you know, game day off, game day off. And so it's a different vibe in practice. But back then, he used to scrimmage all the time and go at it. And he had to win at everything. He was so intense. He really just raised the bar in practice every day because he knew that would elevate our team and make us better. And he literally never took a day off. I mean, he would come out competing and attacking every single day. He just had this insatiable desire to compete, even at a shoot around or a light practice, he was ready to roll.
Coach, you're one of the few people in NBA history that have just found success in every facet of this sport as a player, GM, coach. When you look at the scenes with Jerry Reinsdorf and Krause, what are the first things that come to your mind as someone who dealt with them directly, but then also just in today's landscape and how you manage players?
Well, looking back at that time, it's easy to see if you're just watching the documentary now, it's easy to look at and go, what the hell? Why didn't they just, you know, keep everything going? But at the time, everything was so fractured. And everybody was exhausted. And so I have felt that kind of fatigue and that exhaustion both as a player and as a coach with the Warriors. You know, when you are at that level for multiple years and everybody's coming after you, it's really hard. It is really difficult, on so many levels. And, so, you know, what I learned from Phil Jackson back then, has been so valuable for me as a coach, understanding the need to give players more leeway, more freedom as the stretch or as the run continues, because because of that fatigue, because of that exhaustion, you can't continue to drive guys as hard as you did maybe in the first year or two. And I thought one of my favorite parts of the first episode was when they asked Phil if he was upset about Scotty getting surgery right before the season started. And he said, no, he said, Scotty needed the break. He needed to get his anger out at management. So I wasn't upset at all. I thought that was amazing because there's very few coaches who would kind of look at it that way. But that's who Phil was.
Steve Kerr joining us here on the morning show. And Steve, I'm curious, like, obviously you sat down to do a number of interviews for this project, but as I watch Michael in this, I can't help but notice that the level of the liquid in his glass is going up and down with each different shot. How long do they have you guys in those interview sessions?
I just like the fact that he's got scotch and a cigar next to him during the interview. How cool is that?
it's actually his tequila, apparently. It's been reported that's his own brand of tequila that he's drinking, and it's not scotch.
Oh, that's tequila. Okay. Well, either way, he's winning in life. That's the message I get. He's definitely winning. For him, I'm sure it was a lot more time in front of the camera than most of us. But my interview was about 2 years ago. The Warriors were in New York playing the Knicks, and they set it up, came by our hotel, and it was probably an hour, 45 minutes or an hour. And, definitely a trip down memory lane and a lot of things that they're covering, in the documentary were things they brought up, and I had to sort of dig deep to remember some of this stuff. And that's the thing, is, after 20 plus years, you forget a lot of stuff. And so it's really fun to watch all this as it unfolds.
What were you drinking during your interview?
Room temperature water.
That's not nearly as much fun.
You disappoint me.
That's no good at all.
You disappoint me.
Hey, Steve, I'm curious that this obviously has been incredibly promoted on ESPN, and we're seeing commercials. And in the graphic, there's Michael, there's Scotty, there's Phil, there's Dennis, and there's you. Were you surprised to see yourself in there?
I was shocked. But I guess because this is 22 years later, they decided to put in the three guys were obvious: Michael, Scotty, Dennis, and then Phil. He's obvious. So then I guess they decided to take the other one who's in the limelight still, because the younger generation probably wouldn't recognize Tony Kukoc or Luke Longley or Ron Harper. Those are the guys who should have been on it. From a production standpoint, who were the best players? Tony Kukoc was just incredibly gifted and meant so much to those teams. Same with Ron Harper was a great player. And so I was kind of in shock when I saw that promo for the first time and I was on there. But, I get it. I get it. People are going to know me because my, my coaching with the Warriors. And so I guess that was the decision.
Last question, and this is a really important one. Have you seen The Tiger King?
I'm not going there. I'm not watching Tiger King. I've drawn the line there. I refuse.
Because
it just feels like I don't know how to say this without sounding like like an ass, but it just feels like it hits a little too close to home for our country. Like, this is, come on, we can do better.
Amen. With that in mind, we will say thank you and we will say goodbye, because there's nothing left to say.
It's too
thank
real you, coach. For you, Appreciate coach. It. It's too real for you.
Thanks, Steve.
It's far too real. We got to do better.
Appreciate it. Thanks a bunch, Steve.
All right, guys.
Thank you.
All right. Yeah. Yeah, that's the best synopsis of the Tiger King I've heard yet, that we can do better. That doesn't mean we don't want to look at it, though. Oh, man.
We can do better. I guess he wanted an escape, not a reminder.
Yeah, indeed. Crosstalk with George Sedano coming up next. So, George, we've been talking about how we're going to be set up for the draft tonight. What is it going to look like in the Sedano household? You've got monitors. You've got food. What do we got going?
I haven't really discussed the food part of this yet. I haven't really gone that far yet. I just like watching the draft by myself. I just want the kids to be away in some part of the house where I'm not around them for these first few, hours or whatever. And, I'll see them when they go to bed, right? I'll do that part of the night and then just get right back in front of the TV. Like, I just like to be alone during the draft. I don't like to watch it with people. I don't need all the pomp and circumstance. Just let me watch it and focus on it.
Is it because you're like me and you just know Miami's going to mess up and you just want to be alone?
Well, if that happens, I'm going to go on. I'll end up going viral, probably. Like, that's just it. I'll end up just, like, doing something. Like, I'll turn on my phone and something will go wrong and I will probably just go. And as long as I don't lose my job over it, I feel like anything else is okay.
All right, George, take me through it.
Lions draft a third.
Oh, I know. You and I are in the same boat. And it's crazy because, at least for you, like, no offense, like, the Lions have always been bad. You know what I'm saying? Like, I grew up in the Dolphins.
How are you going to say no offense? How are you going to say no offense
Okay, offense. Offense taken. The Lions have always been bad. I grew up and the Dolphins were good. You know what I'm saying? Like, they were legitimately a Super Bowl contender every year when I was growing up. And basically from 1999 on, they've been a joke.
So, George, you tell me, as a fan of a team that has struggled for recent history, do you want to see them take a flyer on a guy who had his leg ripped out of its socket?
Yes.
Or do you want to see them skip it?
Yes, because the guy with the leg ripped out of his socket is really, really good. He's the best quarterback on the board if he's healthy. And here's the thing. They're rebuilding, Travis. They don't have to play him next season. They're going to go with Ryan Fitzpatrick anyway and get good draft picks for next year, too. And they've got all these assets this year and next year. You might as well utilize him. Take it slow with him. He's the best guy in the draft. Don't overthink this thing. You were tanking for Tua, okay? That was the whole point of this thing before the injury. So just do that.
What are you going to do when the Raiders pick someone that the Dolphins should have gotten?
Yeah, I'm going to be mad. Look, I'm going to be mad. Like, if Tua falls to the Raiders and they take him, I'm going to be mad. Like, that's just the reality of this. Go ahead.
Oh, no, you go ahead.
No, I'm just going to be mad. I'm going to be angry. That is going to happen. Like, I have spent the better part of, God, almost every draft day I can remember in my adulthood, for the most part, being angry at something they've done. I know that the YouTube clips about the Jets fans are out there, but I would imagine, like, that it would be the same way for me. Like, if you just had, like, a video in my house for the last 20 years, I'd be sitting there and just going, like, why did you do this? Like, they drafted Ted Ginn one year. I'm like, what are you doing? You drafted a kick returner, like, in the first round. Yeah, what the hell are you doing?
It's not great. Do you think we're going to know about the Chargers and whether or not they're going to have Cam Newton on their roster based on what they do with that sixth pick?
Say that again, because Greg Bergman was annoying me on text. Say that again. Yeah, I'm sorry.
No, what I'm asking is, depending on what the Chargers do with that sixth pick, do you think that will let us know whether or not Cam is headed to L.A.?
Yes. I if they take Herbert or Tua, then there's no reason for Cam. I think, look, as much as I'd like to see Cam in L.A., I think that the Chargers feel good enough that Tyrod Taylor isn't going to make the mounds of mistakes that Phillip Rivers made last year, that he's just going to be a caretaker, a game manager, and they're going to run the ball and play defense and play old school Ravens 2000 football and get in the playoffs that way. Now, maybe it happens. Maybe it works. But I don't think that's interesting by any stretch of the imagination.
It's all going down tonight. The draft is just about 7 hours away. The Sedano Show is coming up next. We will break the entire draft down with you at 6 o'clock tomorrow morning here on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN.